Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Today we're going to do a quick review of the NBA playoffs, but before we get into all that, I just want to say hello. Thank you to all of our listeners, and a big thank you to everybody here at Sports Ethos, as the recent weeks have been amazing, not just for the pod, but the pod network and Sports Ethos as a whole. The best person on the planet, Andre Limos, who's going to wince hearing this later in production because he doesn't like to take any credit. He's received so much great effort from everybody across the platform, and when you're a part of something that's just so organically good, it's always a bit of a pinch me moment. If you like all of that and what we're doing here as a company, please like and subscribe to the show. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even get live odds while the games are being played. And then when the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots. Head to the website today and get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus. That's BLEAV on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. With all of that out of the way, I'd like to welcome in my esteemed co-host, Dr. A. Steve Alexander. And I really want you to know, sir, that you gave some music recommendations out a few shows ago. And I'm shocked. I had this album on my iPhone and I wasn't even really listening to it. But the Guster album that you recommended, I listened to it from start to finish, and I think you called it a perfect album, right?
Yeah, it just as far as pop music and pop records go, it's just one hit after another.
It really, I was listening to it. I've heard it on my phone kind of periodically over the years, but you were right in that it is one hit after another. But I was listening to it front to back, and then it dawned on me that what's your friend's name with the hands, the thunder god? What's his name?
Brian.
He's amazing.
Brian Rosenworcel.
His work on that album is just amazing. So thank you, sir, for the recommendation. And listeners, definitely get out there and listen to that album. It's perfect. We're going to talk NBA playoffs today. And I know I'm personally licking wounds because I can't pick a game right to save my life, but I feel like we're licking wounds for Indiana here today. This is a bad turn of events for these guys. I kind of saw that game playing out a little bit similarly to game one, in that Boston just kept jumping out to a lead and then Indiana would close it. Pascal Siakam was amazing. Shout out our listeners who are keeping me on the up and up with the player name enunciation. But then finally Boston just pulled away. And obviously there's an issue there with Indiana and Tyrese Halliburton. But how did you feel watching all of this play out? It feels like something got taken from us, right?
Yeah, I mean, this game is completely acceptable. It was a 126-110 Boston win. I felt like Boston was in control of the game the entire evening, but Indy never really went away until the end. And that was after Tyrese Halliburton went down with a left leg injury, and Rick Carlisle started his G League squad for the beginning of the fourth quarter, and it was essentially over at that point. But Indy hung around, and it had the Pacers just closed out game one up three with 10 seconds left and the ball, that team wins that game 99 times out of 100. Only Carlisle and the Pacers could find a way to blow that basically guaranteed win. Had they gotten that game, the series, everything would be fine. Like, no one would be panicking. No one would be saying it's over. it would totally be up in the air headed back to Indy for two games. But as it stands, the Pacers need to win both of these games in Indy, and they need to win them by a solid margin if we want to get people off the panic train.
Ah, if we want to get people off the panic train, I was thinking maybe even to put a little seed of doubt into Boston's mind after they've been just sort of cruising here. Shams Charania reports that his status is up in the air for game three and had a chest x-ray in there as well. And I got
Halliburton.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I've watched the Halliburton injury stuff since Sacramento. He's a really thin player, so he just takes on a lot of, you know, contact, and, you know, just feels like he needs to probably work on his strength as the next thing. And also, while not losing any of his athleticism and his speed, that's always the question mark there. But yeah, if they win game one, I'll save my Rick Carlisle aside for a few seconds from now. But like, if they win that game one and then game two plays out like this and Halliburton gets hurt, then they could probably, you know, not, you don't want to rest him, but if it's to the point where playing him is going to hurt him, or he's just going to be completely ineffective, you know, a la OG Anunoby, that you could get out of that if you won game one and, you know, live to fight another day and say like game four or something. So that loss in game one was just absolutely brutal. That part about them maybe taking the loss and kind of losing their momentum and not having the mental fortitude to fight in game two, maybe there was something to that. I don't know. It felt like they had good fortitude through the first half. Into the second half, they kind of let go of the rope a little bit there. Losing Tyrese Halliburton, and I think they knew that in the locker room at halftime. That Rick Carlisle post-game presser was really funny. When he's quoting HIPAA laws, I just like, I couldn't stop giggling because I just don't say it, Rick. Like, say you're not going to say it. Like, you know, you don't have to quote HIPAA laws to get out of the Tyrese Halliburton update. And maybe this chest thing has something to do with that. Maybe he doesn't want the competition to know that he's got, you know, a chest injury of some type, you know, and run him through a whole bunch of screens. I don't know.
I am excited to see what TJ McConnell can do if Tyrese is out. If Halliburton's out, McConnell's been waiting for this moment all year, and he's been one of the Pacers' better players in these playoffs. Not necessarily in the series, but overall, he's been a huge factor for the Pacers all year. And if they have to start him at point guard, I think there are worse things that could happen to the Pacers. Like, I'm really curious to see how they play if McConnell plays and starts at point guard and Halliburton sits out, because I feel like they're not going to lose that much.
You're really touching some interesting territory with that one, I think.
But Halliburton's three-point shooting clearly will be missed more than anything, I think.
Halliburton's one of the most difficult players in the league to analyze, I think. And there's been some great analysis. Tim Legler, of course. I don't know if you're a fan. I'm a huge fan of Tim Legler. Just sort of talking about like why people are frustrated with Halliburton's play, because he'll do a bunch of stuff you don't like to see and then turn around and drill like four sidestep threes in a row, make, you know, amazing passes and have one turnover in the entire game. And you just are like, what did I just watch? Like, it's all over the place. But Legler's point is that Halliburton's reads from game to game, you know, they're just not consistent. So it's not so much I guess everybody can agree that he plays well, but when he's coming off the pick and roll, the choice between aggression and passivity, that's different from game to game. And so when you don't have that consistency there, that can lead to a lot of different issues and, you know, confuse the heck out of everybody trying to figure out, you know, what is Tyrese Halliburton? And you're sitting here saying, you know, TJ McConnell could come in and they might not lose much. And that's absolutely true. I thought McConnell really struggled with, like, I don't know why everything he shoots is short. Like, like I think his entire career, every shot barely gets up and over the rim and in. But he missed short on all of his misses, 4 of 10 in this game. It's kind of a, when you see a team that's struggling, especially on the road in Boston, and they're not making shots, you kind of just know that that's not good and that they're not going to get that figured out by the end of the game. It just felt like a lot of shots they would normally make, they that rimmed in and out or just didn't make. McConnell was dying with that. But at the same time, he has the toughness. He has this ability to penetrate that's really unique. And you're telling me that they might not lose that much. And I'm in agreement with you. So that's a little odd for Tyrese Halliburton's value, you know, just the proposition there. But so if he plays, do you think they'll start? Or if Halliburton doesn't play, do you think they'll start McConnell?
I think they should, but I don't know what Rick Carlisle will do. He'll probably just go Nembhard because he loves Nembhard so much and leave McConnell in his reserve role. But I think he should be starting McConnell and Nembhard should be playing off the ball. But what do I know?
Nembhard played pretty well in that game. He made a lot of tough shots, a lot of save me shots, like, you know, when the team's letting go of the rope and they need somebody to do something, anything. Miles Turner held to 8 points, 3 of 7 shooting. That was a rough game for him, 4 turnovers. At the same time, I didn't really look at Miles Turner's play and think, oh, this is really Miles's issue. It probably, if I had to put a finger on it, I would say Halliburton needs to be a lot better, but who knows? Maybe he's been injured the entire time. And that's why we've seen inconsistency. And a lot's been discussed about players playing through injuries, perhaps to get to the 65-game threshold to qualify for various things. And Halliburton, that second half of the season just screamed, I'm playing with a bad hammy. So that's not great.
Like Turner, I feel like Turner was due for an off game anyway. Like, he's been playing so well, so aggressively that maybe they game planned a little differently for him and focused on shutting him down.
We'll say this. If it weren't for Pascal Siakam, yeah, getting that right, right? This game would have been real ugly. He was really outstanding in this game. 13 of 17 from the field, 28 points. It's like he knows a thing or two about this Boston squad. On the other side, they just had everything going. Jaylen Brown, 40 points. Jaylen's going to go for 40. I think you're done. Derek White, 23 points. Jason Tatum, 23 points. Tatum had that foul drawing game. I mean, only 4 of 4 from the foul line, but it just felt like he could get to the rim kind of at will in this game. I think that Indy was afraid of fouling him after the last game. Al Horford, 6 points, 3 of 6 shooting, 10 boards. Not really targeted as much in this game. Maybe a bit of a mistake there. Boston's good. Boston's real good. I don't know if there's much to say about their side of the line. Is there any chance for Indy, you think, now? They got to win 2 at home big, you said.
You win both games in Indy, and then everything's fine again.
Oh, yeah.
But it depends. It depends on Halliburton, too. If they rule him out for the series or say he's going to miss multiple games, then the feeling starts to wane, starts to lie away.
I'm curious, would you lean into any injured star theory where, you know, the team rallies and Boston's favored by probably, if I had to imagine, Boston would be favored by something like 7 or something. Let me look. That number's probably already up. Of course it's already up. We got Boston favored by 7. There you go. So if Halliburton's out, that probably jumps to 8.5. Or 7 is our, so, or Vegas already knows that Halliburton's out and that 7 is the number there. Would you flirt with the Pacers? +7 in game 3.
Yeah, I have not lost faith. Oh, somebody on Twitter was giving me a hard time for having like 7 favorite teams. And I can't argue with the guy. I mean, really not 7. It's but it's a lot. I mean, I love Oklahoma City and Minnesota and Dallas and Indiana.
Polyamory is the thing now. Everybody's talking about polyamory. It's with polyamory with basketball teams. I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a Pacers fan. Now, I needed to win at something. Boston. I need to bet on Boston at some point, and I need Boston to not be so favored.
Well, trying to only be a Hawks fan or a Falcons fan is almost impossible. It's one of the it's one of the most excruciating experiences anyone can ever have. So you got to have some backups available. You got to have some other favorites. But really, the day that the Hawks traded Luka to Dallas is when I started buying Dallas gear and became a Dallas fan.
So. That's a hell of a segue, sir, because I think I texted you. Well, first of all, I'm watching game one and getting messages from people, and I'm like an hour and a half behind the game. And the first one I got was about Kyle Anderson. Hey, Kyle Anderson, you know, looking good, making you look good. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I got Minnesota -4. And then I get your text, sir. Luka, all exclamation points. And like Kyrie as well. And I'm like trying to game it out in my head. I was like, okay, Steve sent me this. What time in the game did he send me this? Was it the third quarter? And then I'm thinking it was the fourth quarter. Was it the fourth quarter when you sent me that?
Dude, I have no idea. That was like 2 days ago.
I know, I know. What was the day? We don't even know. But so then I texted you back. Like, I think this might be like the universe's way of saying that Luka's the best player in the league and that he wins a championship. If you're going to be a playoff baller like Luka Doncic, did I get that one right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be a playoff like God like that, and Kyrie might have been better in game one, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that. But if you're going to be that good, can we have that conversation with Luka that he's the best player in the league? I mean, we're calling Jokic the best player in the league. But Luka's still standing.
Luka does things. Luka does things that I have not seen other people do. And just his ability to be falling down and off balance and then firing a bullet right through the chest of a teammate all the way across the court, or some of those ridiculous full court passes he makes, and just the way he's getting along with Kyrie and I mean, in my Homer opinion, I think Luka is the best player in the league, but
I wanted to see if you would go there. It's hard right now. Like the you got Victor Wembanyama just sitting there in the background. Like, could be, maybe. I mean, I don't know how you measure that. He played for the Spurs this year. I saw things that he did that I've never seen on a basketball floor, and many of them, like the unstoppable stuff, the stuff that you feel like they're going to have to make new rules for him, kind of a stuff. But Jokic is Jokic, and we've talked about his place in history, and that, you know, even just as recently as some of his big games, it's like, that's maybe the best performance I've seen, you know. And then you get Anthony Edwards, you know, getting Michael Jordan comparisons, and then here comes Luka just barreling in like, hey, remember me? And you're right. Like, the fact that he can sort of pinball around out there, not so much of a finisher. If there's a flaw in his game, I think some of the finishing is, you know, and I think he even knows that, because sometimes he'll, like, pass out of these situations where others would take a shot as he's going to the rim, but it's like he doesn't even need that. And he will just spin and find whoever he needs to find, and then when he needs to take over the game, I mean, there's just no hesitation at all. He just does the big boy thing and knocks down big shots over and over again.
Well, and he's not scared to take a three. with the game on the line. And when he does it, you can almost feel it going in. Like he's hitting big shots, and he's doing everything, man. He's down under the glass rebounding. He's playing defense. They highlighted his defensive plays, a couple of them, the night before last, or 3 or 4 days ago, whenever that was. And then he's not afraid to take that step back three and throw a dagger in your eye when everything's on the line. And I mean, to me, he's got the best skill set combined with sort of that dog killer instinct where I just don't care. I'm gonna hit this shot over your face and then go yell at the crowd all the way down to the other end of the court. Now I'm gonna do it again.
Yeah, speaking of yelling, he's taken a little bit of a break on the officials, and I know that's sort of reached a narrative status on the broadcast as well as just in Twitter spaces. I'm not so concerned with that, but if there is another gear for Luka to save some energy that he's giving away, I think that's scary for the rest of the league. And to the point about being the baddest man in the gym, like, that is so valuable. It's really allowed Kyrie Irving to just be Kyrie Irving and, you know, just do Kyrie Irving stuff and be super happy, as we've discussed in previous shows. When you know you have that guy, you know, the pressure is just off everybody else, and everybody else on this Dallas team is thriving in their roles. I mean, you just go down the line, all of them, the rest of the starting lineup, PJ Washington. I mean, nothing too crazy in this game, which finished 108-105. So scoring numbers a little bit depressed. 13 points for Washington. Derek Jones, 8 points. Daniel Gafford, 10 points. Nothing crazy out of these guys. But they all did their jobs, and the moment wasn't too big for them. I thought the combo of Gafford and Lively completely outplayed Rudy Gobert. That's probably not great for Minnesota in this series if that's just going to be the way that it is. Did you see it that way?
Yeah, who was the somebody was out there, a former player, there all these regular season awards over and over again. He's not that good at defense. Is essentially what this person was saying. And I was just kind of laughing because I think Lively and Gafford are, I mean,
like, better.
Dare I say they're just as effective as Gobert and Cat, if not more.
That's a terrible equation for Minnesota if that's going to be the case. And I mean, based on game one, you at least got to consider this. You know, Gafford's doing really, really good stuff out there. I just continue to be impressed with the evolution of his game in terms of instinct, offensive ability. Lively just beating those guys everywhere to everything. 11 rebounds for him, 27 minutes. 1 of 1 from the foul line. Dude keeps making his foul shots. Like, talk about rising to the moment. He's even got, you know, off-court stuff that's, you know, bogging him down, plus 19 for him. And minus 15 for Gafford, but I don't know how that happened. That one doesn't make too much sense.
Yeah, that is weird. He played well, though. I mean, 10 points, 9 boards and a block, 5 and 9 shooting. And we know Gafford plays defense, so... Kyrie Irving and Luka now make up probably the most, the scariest backcourt offensively in the league. You got Luka. Somebody call what?
Yeah, Stan Van Gundy called him the best backcourt of all time.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, it's frightening.
There's an argument.
They have two of the best dribblers, two of the best ball handlers, two of the best passers, two of the best offensively gifted point guards of all time. And Luka's been in the league 5 years. I think we can move on from saying he hasn't proven anything yet. He's done this every single year and is only getting better and more confident.
He's taking his teams deep into the playoffs, you know, with inferior squads, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. You've really been the I would say, one of the leaders of the Luka train. It's kind of hard. There's a lot of Luka fans out there. A lot of people saw this coming. I would say Sacramento Kings fans saw that coming. not a fan of the Kings, but I saw things. In Minnesota, I thought one of the biggest things that was really impacting the game for them, which they only lost by three, which, you know, I don't know if that bodes well or bad. You know, there's arguments on both sides of the line, but Anthony Edwards has to get into the paint. And I don't think the double teaming was the problem in that game. I think he just didn't want to go into the paint. And I don't think he had a plan for what he would do if he got into the paint. Maybe some spacing issues there, you know, with players just sort of clogging lanes. And this is the Rudy Gobert issue. You know, that said, I thought Rudy Gobert actually had a few good offensive moments. So I don't know if I'm going to pin it all on him. He was a plus 10, by the way, Rudy Gobert. But Anthony Edwards, man, he's got single coverage, and I don't really care. Like, PJ Washington was kind of shutting him down a little bit out there. If you're going to be Michael Jordan, I'm sorry, PJ Washington cannot shut you down. What do you think is going on with Ant? Do you think he's hurt?
No. Ant was 6 of 16 after shooting 6 of 24 the previous game. This is like baseball fans crack me up because the Braves will lose a game or two and the fan base is throwing their arms up like, what is wrong with this team? This is garbage. Why? And it's like, hey, dude, baseball is all about cycles. It's all cyclical. Teams get hot, players get hot, and then they get cold. Basketball is kind of the same way. I mean, I don't think you can be on for 82 straight games all year. Like, it's going to ebb and flow a little bit. And I just feel like Ant went on a tear to where he looked like the best player in the world. But the reason we weren't talking about him being the best player in the world all season long is because we really didn't see this out of him until the end of the year when he sort of got hot and put everything together, going, you know, right as the playoffs were starting. So he'll get hot again, maybe as soon as the next game, but the last few, he has not looked like the world's best player as we were anointing him a couple of days before that.
Yeah, I think the explosion's not there for whatever reason. I think it was Reggie Miller who asked the question if he was injured. And then there was times where he was just completely out of gas. I mean, walking the ball up, dribbling it to like 8, and, you know, kind of just throwing his hat at it at the end of the day. So conditioning, a little bit interesting that, you know, at his age, that he's dealing with that. I mean, Josh Hart would probably like to have a word with him regarding conditioning, if that really is an issue. Mike Conley, 2 of 7, 6 of 20 for Cat. And I would say the 6 that he made were really important. like some really timely shots. But 6 of 20, that's not going to work. But kind of in a sense, like, he other than Jaden McDaniels, who continues to play well after really struggling in the middle of the last series, 24 points, 9 of 15 shooting, 6 threes. I found it a little funny that Minnesota was kind of going to McDaniels like, hey, you've got the hot hand, and these are some high leverage shots. And of course, he's not going to just go 9 of 9 from 3. You know, it was, I started thinking as I was watching this, I was like, maybe NBA teams should, like, if they've got a guy that's gone 5 of 5 or 6 of 6 or something really, really nice, do you just not pass to him anymore? Because it's like impossible for somebody to go 9 of 9. But regardless, you're relying on Jaden McDaniels for these high leverage shots because you can't get an easy shot against Dallas. Their defense has been outstanding. So I guess let's wrap this up in a question.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah, the defense, right. Like, so what do you do if you're Minnesota? How do you shake this thing loose? Because the way it looks right now, Dallas looks like they can defend them.
I don't know that I have an answer for that. I don't know. I don't know what you do to stop Luka. And anything you do to stop Luka is just going to free up Kyrie more. Kat is not known as a defensive player, which I think works in favor of Gafford, and as an offensive player, which also works in favor of Gobert and Lively, or Lively and Gafford. And it's almost like Minnesota needs, like, they can't be getting six of whatever shooting from Ant and Cat. Like, they need those guys to be hitting 9 of 14 or 10 of 16, something like that. Not the 6 of 10 and 6 of 12 or whatever. Yeah, they just need Cat and Ant to play better. Like, Cat and Ant need to get mad, put this team on their back, and worry, you know, really work offensively, to put it in the basket, I think.
Yeah, no, and Chris Finch went at them. You know, his public comments were essentially like, I'm paraphrasing here, that, you know, we looked at the film and I basically tore them apart. And when you say that publicly, that's a move. You can only go to the well a couple times with that as a coach, depending on the amount of respect you have in the locker room. So the whole everybody needs to just play better is certainly, that's a theme of these playoffs this year. It just feels like teams have been super inconsistent with what they bring to the table. And you get these lopsided scores that, you know, just don't even make sense. Talking primarily about the Minnesota and Denver series. But I kind of think they've got to find some way, I don't care who it is, which player, to get into the paint and get that defense collapsing and get that defense questioning itself and get them turning their heads. Feels like they're just able to sit back there, you know, perch themselves back, you know, knowing they've got some great length and they're just not having to be forced to be stretched or decision-making or anything like that. Some of that, I think, Anthony Edwards just being tentative and kind of playing around the perimeter and not wanting to just get in there. So maybe they're going to have to get him in some pick and roll, maybe some cross screen action, some motion, anything that they can do to free him up so he can just get some line of sight on the basket. A couple of paint dunks, you know, by him, anything in the paint that's going to break things down. I think that's like mandatory. And that might mean that you get more Naz Reid. Some parts of the internet are saying that this isn't a Naz Reid series. I don't know if I would go that far. I don't think he played well in the last game, but I think this Gobert Towns, you know, the Twin Towers, this is the stuff that really I think people were worried about with the trade, is Minnesota gets defendable real quick if you don't have to respect Rudy Gobert's shooting. And then if Cat's going to go 6 of 20 or something's faltering for those guys, the court just gets so shrunk so quick. So I just wonder, especially if your backs are against the wall, like, you can't not start Rudy Gobert. I think organizationally they just wouldn't do it. But Nas getting like 28 minutes to me seems like a real good prescription for those guys. Do you see it that way?
And it worked. It worked against one center like Jokic. You know, nobody was complaining about, well, actually people were complaining about Gobert in that series about getting run over, like Jokic was driving a truck. But having the two big men in there against Jokic, I mean, it kind of worked. And I think the difference here is you've got two big men against, it's 2-on-2 instead of 2-on-1. And that evened everything out. And I will say that if you took Cat's shooting line and you took Ant's shooting line and you gave those to Luka and Kyrie, Dallas would have lost this game by 25 or 30. Dallas needs Luka and Kyrie to go off, and they are. And the line for tonight, or for I don't even know what day we're in at this point.
Yeah, I know, right? Today.
Minnesota minus 5.5 for game two. And I'm taking Dallas all day. Give me 5.5.
You take Dallas.
Luka and Kyrie hanging in there until the end.
Yeah, I mean, you can build an argument that they could win this game real easily. And so you're going to take the 5.5 points. Of course, Vegas is looking for the correction here and just expecting a bounce back. They don't expect a repeat of the last series cadence, which is the home team losing the first two games. How great would that be if we got a repeat of all that? I'm probably staying away from this game. I do think there is a great chance that Minnesota bounces back in some regard. I just don't know what that's going to look like. I mean, they had the lead, you know, throughout most of the game. And if you're looking for one moment in that game, that was just like, it's the classic. There's one of these in every game. And it was Jamal Murray not running back after he missed a three. I think it was game seven. And you look at it and it's like, that was worth 10 points. It wasn't worth three or wasn't worth whatever. That was worth 10. And in this game, it was Nikhil Alexander-Walker. I didn't know it at the time, but it was the 9-minute mark ballpark around the fourth quarter or in the fourth quarter. And it was a little swing action. And he took a three that he just shouldn't have taken. You know, it was a little too challenged. You're just thinking time and score, you know, what's going on here? Why is this guy lifting this shot up? And it was a miss, obviously. And then Dallas started just really coming at that point. And he had missed 8 3-pointers prior to that shot, what they said on the telecast. So little things in a game like that, in a game so tight for you to, you know, have a guy who's not known for his shooting come in and take that shot, and then the floodgates start coming down. It's a critical moment kind of a deal. So, you know, maybe that game wouldn't even played out that way if you could have gotten a better shot in that circumstance, and Minnesota sort of squeezes the life out of them. I'm probably not going to bet this, but if I did, I think I would be with you on Dallas 5.5. So tonight, big game. We're going to see how it all goes down. Then that's going to wrap up this show. We're going to go through the credits here, so to speak. But and then Monday we're going to be back and we're going to be talking Charlotte Hornets, which I'm tempted to say dumpster fire. Yes, yeah, you know, it's like make fun of Charlotte a whole bit, but there might be some more. I think there's some interesting fantasy talk there for Charlotte. Like and follow the show, guys. The more you guys do that, the more internet points we get, the more you know, search engine stuff happens and all that, you know, kind of social network influencer BS. But definitely do that. It helps us out, and we're very appreciative of all of your support. If you're not a premium member, you're definitely going to want to lock in the rates. I just had a meeting with the NFL department yesterday, and I mean, I worked on draft guides in the past with Roto World, you know, NFL stuff as well. This thing is deep, man. The plans that these guys showed me, I was like, wow. This is going to be super competitive. So you can get an all sport membership right now for basically pennies on the dollar, and you keep that price for life as long as you keep your membership active. So take a look at that. Steve-O, you got anything to say before we take off here?
No, I'm just fired up to watch some hoops tonight.
Love it. Follow him online, DOCKTORA. Follow myself at Aaron Bruski, AaronBruski. At Sports Ethos and at Ethos Fantasy NBA. This has been Fantasy NBA Today, folks, presented by Bet Online, a Sports Ethos presentation. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be well.
It's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.